Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another reality show. I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and it is the beginning of 2010. I can't tell you how excited I am about that because, pretty much 2009 kicked Goldie's butt. So I am really excited about 2010, and I have some amazing shows lined up. Tonight will be no exception. I have I have one guest that's been on my show but hasn't been on in a while, and one guest that's never been on, and allow me to introduce them. First is Daniel Jacobs. He's a conscious channel, a writer, a bioenergetic body worker. He lives in the Seattle area. He owns and operates Myo Rehab Therapy Associates in Washington. And on 11/11/1991, he began working with a group of energies that called themselves the Reconnections. My second guest, and I will definitely welcome you in just a moment, Daniel. My second guest is Robert Sabella. Robert Sabella is both an artist and a technician in every sense of the word. He has a deep understanding of metaphor and symbolism intrinsic to astrology and metaphysics. Robert works from a very heart-centered place that carries both wisdom and a strong, profound intuition. He has that rare and unique creative combination of love and vision that is at once healing. Robert's work provides practical solutions and guidance that illuminates, empowers, and resolves. And I'm simply delighted that both of you are here tonight. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thank you. So nice and to be back again with Golden Hawk.
Yeah! And welcome to the show, Robert.
Thanks, Goldie. Nice to be here.
A pleasure. So we have a, we have a hot show here tonight, guys.
To match the hot house that you're living in right now.
It is the hot house. I mean, my father is heating our house through coal, and I honor that. You know, it's inexpensive. We don't burn oil. But, friends, a coal stove has zero regulation on it, and it is about 125 degrees in my house right now. So if it's not a hot topic, at least know that Goldie the host is hot. Yes, she is.
Well, we've known that all along. Barbecued Goldie.
So we were talking. We had a pre-show conversation, Daniel, Robert, and myself, and we were speaking about some really, topics that I believe that most people are experiencing on some level right now, but they might not have the words. Or the dynamic around it to know how to define what they are experiencing. And this show, for the next 2 hours, it's really, I'm very excited that we are going to bring, you know, at the very least, some awareness about how we are affected in life by the process of ascension, which the point that we're going to be focusing on, you know, tonight is how our masculine and our feminine energies are uniting, so to speak, and becoming one within our being. So we'll still hold a gender, we'll still be, you know, male or female, but almost beyond the physical, nothing about us might, you know, still be the same. I mean, our belief systems are going to shift, and the roles that we play, the rules that we play by, how we play, who we play with. I mean, you know, okay, somebody jump in.
Well, very well put, Goldie.
Oh, thank
Love
you.
Words. Well, it was not too long ago that Robert began to talk a bit to me about this this article he had read about X and Y chromosomes and the shifts and changes in the DNA.
Yes.
And I don't even think we got to talk much about that the other night when we were previewing with Goldie, but maybe you might want to start there, Robert, and tell a little bit about that, because that got us going, I remember, you and I, when we first started.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was a fairly recent prompting for me to look further into this whole dynamic between male and female energies. And that was the story about Caster Semenya, the South African runner, where there was just international attention was drawn to her situation, where they were not sure if she was a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Is this the woman that, okay, so she had a sex change or something? Or?
No. She was...
hermaphrodite, right?
Yeah, but they were terming her intersex. And though they discussed a lot, I mean, most of the discussion that I heard had to do with whether there was enough biological evidence to deem her a man or a woman and then determine if she was basically competing in the right domain. But what this prompted for me was much more of an inner exploration of how these two forces within us combine and dance with each other to create particular outcomes that go beyond the original imprinting that we come in with. So, you know, the DNA and basically our physical patterning that is an extension of that DNA as a container for who we are. And then you add to that the environment that we grow up in, the familial environment, the society, the culture, which also creates a very powerful and almost instantaneous imprint as well on this structure that we are coming in to inhabit. But what happens, what's been pretty clear to me is that we stay closely aligned with that original imprint when that indeed is trying to evolve and grow and shift and change and express itself in different ways, but there hasn't been a lot of permission for us to do that.
Well, does the body need permission to evolve?
The body evolves on, in my opinion, the body evolves on its own. It's the human consciousness and the expression of that consciousness that oftentimes needs permission or encouragement or a forum or freedom to evolve and explore what it can be.
When we talk about consciousness, we talk about that which is allowed by the ego entity in to pay attention to this. Okay, I'm going to become conscious of this. But then, you know, there's been controversy over the years and teachings over the years about the subconscious and unconscious self. And the thing about the body is oftentimes it will be a wonderful mirror or a barometer that not only encompasses the conscious, but also the subconscious and even unconscious selves as they play themselves out, not only with the individual, but with the planet and with particular parts of the planet, you know, geographical regions and so on. There's these...
So it's all influencing the body as well. And,
like
and
paintings, there are themes being painted upon the bodies, and we're trying to figure them out, and oftentimes the changes are happening faster than we can change our definitions.
Yeah.
Well, right, because I think one of the very things as a foundational belief system that would, you know, in my personal experience, make life easier is that change is good as opposed to being afraid of change. You know, change is, and like Daniel just said, it's happening more rapidly now than... I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm very passionate about what I'm telling you today, but don't be surprised if tomorrow I'm telling you something completely the opposite with just as much passion, mind you.
Uh-huh.
You know, like
right.
We have to be fluid in what's, you know, what we call our truth and what is going on, and because it's all changing rapidly.
Well, that's the point, Goldie. And when going back to this whole notion of the, you know, the body needing permission to evolve, what I was trying to say there is that the body is a container for this. And we have a tendency to over-identify with, for instance, the gender of that body and the prevailing available information and permission around what that male or female body is allowed to or entitled to do, given the culture, given the race, given the religion, given the age, the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So what we want to move into tonight and you know, at this time, is exploring how dynamic that really is and can be, and how we have to intervene with that programming so that we can allow ourselves to explore this incredible diversity and that's available to us as a richness. But there's a very strong instinct to not do that because it's very primary in our conditioning to step into a type of patterning that we pretty much know is going to generate positive feedback and love for us. And stepping out of that is a threat to the ego.
Right. Well, and, right. No, and I think shows like this that are, if we can just bring awareness to the idea that we have a choice. We have a choice in the roles that we play. We have a choice in, like I was saying, you know, just in the opening, who we play with, how we play with. Because I agree wholeheartedly with you that there are people who are like, oh, I could never do that. And I'm like, you know, it's hard for me to come up with examples. Like, I only know for myself my examples, you know. I mean, I've been my whole life going, you know, it's going to be Prince Charming that is going to rescue me from my, you know, my prison sentence in the tower. And it's like, I could not be further from that has been nothing of my experience. I mean, the only one that has saved me from my prison term is me. Mm-hmm. I am not a, you know, a man hater, not by any stretch. I love men. I love women. What I'm saying is we have this belief that, you know, something's going to save us, or, you know, and it's like, I'm just going to keep praying until that Savior comes. And, you know, it's like, that's what I think, I guess, part of it is the religion that puts into us that, you know, we don't have this ability to create anew for us our own reality. And by golly, if we don't create it for ourselves, it doesn't get created. You know,
these
galactics aren't coming.
These two primary forces we speak about are particularly illustrated in that medical symbol that's everywhere, the caduceus or the staff of Hermes, where you have these two serpents wrapped around a pole, and that pole is supposed to symbolize the spine, the sushumna, or the primary channel up the spine on its way to the brain. And the snakes represent the energies, the masculine, feminine, the initiative and responsive energies as they move up and down. You know, there's a communication between Father Sky and Mother Earth, and in between these snakes are intertwined. And it's been the medical symbol for years. And of course, now the medical symbol is trying to figure out which side to take when it comes to those who believe in choice, for example, when we talk about who you're going to love or when or how.
Yeah.
There's a big controversy over whether there is a choice there, and those who are in favor of freedom for homosexuality and expressions in that way will often say, well, we were born this way. We really didn't have a choice. And then those on the other side will sometimes say, well, everybody has a choice. You can, even though you're born a certain way, you can choose to change that path. And there's all kinds of ways you can look at that, you know.
Yeah.
And whether you believe it's good or bad to who people love, it pretty much has to be centered around your own choices and your own self, because what we're coming to is that that's all you really can do. You can't reach across and change the other person into what you want them to be. You can't force them to go according to some norm. Otherwise, there's always big upheavals in the collective psyche.
And I believe that's an awareness, whether you're straight, bi, gay, lesbian, whatever, the idea that we can't change, you know, our partners to be what we want is a huge awakening of self. In other words, we should, you know, I want my partner to be with me because he wants to be with me. And if you don't want to be with me, I'm not going to, you know, trap you or guilt you or, you know what I mean? It's like, but there was a day when I would learn basketball stats in order to keep my partner. You know, I mean, I was like a professional chameleon, and not from the standpoint, because it literally came as I needed to be loved. You do whatever you have to do to make yourself lovable. That was my
interesting
makeup.
Coming. Goldie, I think that's really important what you've just described, because there's two sides to that. And when we're doing it because we feel like we are not lovable or that we feel we're inadequate, this utilizing that chameleon-like nature to conform to basically the energetics of the other person, that's one thing. But in reality, when we team up with someone, we really are trying on their grid. Their grids, and they're trying on ours, and there's an exchange going on. And if it's done in a healthy way, in a conscious way, it can be mutually enhancing, rather than, you know, us just doing that to get the approval.
Indeed. So hey, guys, we have a caller. Are you guys open to taking callers this early?
Sure.
Daniel?
Whatever.
Yeah?
Fine, yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, let's see if I can unmute him. Hi, area code 302, you're on the line.
Hi, this is Angelo calling from Delaware.
Hey,
hi, Angelo.
Well,
welcome to the show.
Hey, Angelo.
Hi, nice to talk to you. Congratulations on your show here.
Oh, thank you.
I spoke with Daniel a couple times.
Oh, yes. How are you, my friend? I remember you. Sure.
I'm in the moment. I'm in the moment of talking to you and watching my fish and seeing the TV and just watching everything kind of all come together, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
Well, I called tonight because it seems like it's just all a bunch of programming. I feel like I see it all, I watch it all, and I see a desired result, and I'm very aware of what is going on. And I can feel the elf energies and the different energies in the atmosphere that are being propagated upon us. And I'm trying to figure out how to use these for the benefit of myself, which benefits all of us, which are all one, just different offshoots.
Yeah, you've sort of introduced another idea here, Angelo, and the fact that we're just talking about males and females here, but we haven't even begun to talk about the interdimensional beings who are kind of poking their nose in and saying...
Oh, is that what he meant by elf? Because I didn't know if it was an anagram of like a harp or something that I didn't know about. Okay.
No, I think he's talking... Aren't you talking a little bit about interdimensional beings that are also introducing themselves into the picture here?
Well, by elf, I mean extra low frequency waves. It's just.
But Daniel, listen, I'm always welcome to bring in, you know, little 6 foot elves too, 6 inch elves too.
Well, they do help you with your elf esteem.
Oh, that's good.
That is good.
Growing up, my parents always had gnomes and elves in front of the house, and I never realized it at the time. But later on, I looked at it all as a message to tell me that all reality is just a bunch of frequencies. I'm really not holding this phone talking to you. I'm just a bunch of electrical neurons firing away, and it's all in the brain. But it feels real, so just go along with it. What can I say?
Robert, I would think you might have something
to say
with this.
I have a question for Angelo. Okay, so all these things that you're aware of and that you're feeling, what are they creating in you that relates to this topic that we're talking about tonight, so this inner dynamic of inner male and inner female energy, which is not gender. We're just talking about the forces of yin and yang, really, two dynamic forces. How is that affecting you?
Well, it affects me to this degree. When you say two dynamic forces, I feel like there is no two. There is just one, and that is it. And each of us are just the same as the one. But we feel separate, but we're not. So for me, it makes me feel like that within me is the God. So that's what it does for me.
That's the essence that generates it all. When that God essence enters physical reality, it differentiates into two dynamic forces. It doesn't contradict the oneness, Angelo. In fact, it is a beautiful experiment here on the Earth plane as we play with this dynamic dance between these two forces, which play out as male and female, and in every expression of those energies. But we're always connected to that oneness, and that's the beauty of all this. But we're evolving through the three-dimensional reality, which is changing and growing in itself. it's expanding now to include, as we move towards 2012, the fourth dimensional reality, which returns you to this essence that you're describing here. But it doesn't contradict or undermine the physical experience as well.
It's nice to know. Growing up as a Catholic boy, I learned in a different type of way, which was good and it had some benefits. But as I got into my 40s and had an awakening, I believe that just as we have the physical experience, that the heaven experience can be had in the same way. But that, too, is just part of the dream, nothing more, nothing less. But within the dream, the part that sucks for me is that I have to obey rules within the dream. And
only if you believe that.
Take a shot.
Even
and
that
we'll
will
see what happens, right?
Well, because one of the things I'm realizing just in my own experience is, you know, the more and more, like, the matrix, the more I stay unplugged from the matrix. And here is the basic ways that I do that. I'm not married, so I'm not registered in the government as a person. I don't make enough to pay taxes on, so I don't pay taxes. I don't own a house, so they don't get me through the system of mortgage. That there is a freedom, but like we were kind of saying earlier in the show, you really find that what you're unplugging from is not just the matrix, it's the tribe. You know, I definitely walk a journey alone because I fly under the radar. And alone in all one. I mean, because, like, I love Daniel's site because he'll say, it's not to say which part are we. It's really to say which part aren't we. We're all of this. Now, where do you want to play? It's really our choice. Where do we want to play?
And although it's a very worthy topic to be able to talk about the All One as a, you might say, the winding up of this grand game we've been playing, it might be a little early to do that because we're still playing out many emotional themes, some of which we'd like to get into in more depth here on the program. So with that little articulation you made, not to forget that, that's very true, Angela.
No, indeed.
Want to get more into this process that's underway, which is the unraveling of these belief systems that we've put ourselves into, not to just step over them, but actually to work through that and watch us as we unfold. Because even if there is one of us who says, well, I'm all one and this doesn't apply to me, all he has to do is look around him and he'll see scads of reflections, you know, that are playing that out still, you know. So even if I say, well, I've ascended, who am I but simply one facet of this multifaceted earth that's going through this process? So we might as well discuss the game at all its levels, including the polarity duality thing we're still into.
Daniel, rock and roll. Angela, I'm going to mute you again. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your energy.
Good
I really
to talk
appreciate
to you again,
it.
Man. You're sounding good and strong.
Well, we'll see what happens. Just 1 minute at a time, or
yeah, you've
in
had
the moment.
Your challenges, and we won't go into any specifics. But Angelo is an example of evolution in process, and it's just good to hear you sounding so strong in 2010.
Well, thank you, and good luck to you all. And I'll keep in touch with your websites. And
yeah, take care, buddy.
Thank
bye
you.
Now.
Bye bye.
You're welcome. Bye now. Okay.
Yeah. So that is a nice
way to keep me on point.
In retrospect, what we might want to do is just lay down some of these new ideas so people have them to talk about, and then maybe toward the end ask a few questions. What do you think, Robert?
That sounds great to me, Daniel.
He's amenable to that.
I agree. I'm telling you, see, I'm so casual, I'm all over the place.
Well, that's good. Everybody needs to have a sample of you, dear, so you keep going all over the place.
Okay, so... Indeed. Okay, so masculine and feminine as an energy.
Right.
Well, getting back to something you said earlier, Goldie, I want to track back to that because I think it was pretty important.
Okay.
This whole notion that something or someone on the outside is going to help us figure it out, is going to help us complete it, help us heal. So this is really important, and everyone's got that going on to one extent or another. So what we're able to explore at this time, in my opinion, often, you know, due to the prevailing energies that are that we're feeling and assimilating every day, is this whole thing around self-bonding, self-reflecting on a level that we haven't done it before.
I've never heard self-bonding before. That's
I was just about to say that's a new term.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go into it.
I've done self-bondage.
That could be a part of this, Daniel, but maybe that'll be our after-hours show, Daniel.
We talked about after-hours.
Okay,
good,
so what, as we start to understand more about how we, the parts of ourselves that we're not willing to own, we project onto someone else or onto the world in general, and we start to reclaim these projections, this is where the real healing starts to begin. Mm-hmm. Because we really see that it really has to do with our relationship with ourselves.
Mm.
So the more we can self-bond, in other words, be there for ourselves in every way, and I mean that, you know, full spectrum, then there's, at that point, there would be no need to project any feature of ourselves on the world or onto another person. So we'd be in more dominion that way. After this happens, of course, then our relationships are going to take on a completely different context and purpose because we're not using that person necessarily as a screen or as a mirror because we're doing that with ourselves. So this is about becoming enough unto ourselves so that we feel true autonomy, not conditional autonomy.
I just spoke with a young star kid yesterday who's done a lot of meditation work, a lot of out-of-body stuff. Well, you might say expanded body stuff. And he was having a dream the other night, and he was talking about doing battle, a young man doing battle with a dragon.
Huh.
And when he first entered into the dream, he was in the spectator position. And he saw this dragon, and he looked down at the young boy, and he saw the idea of fear in the eye of the young boy, and it was sort of like he found himself asking the question, what would I be feeling if I were confronting this dragon? And suddenly the dream changed, and he changed positions where he was now the young boy looking up at the dragon. Now, this is something that's going to be new technology, but there are people who are already using this in their both their dream life as well as their meditational life, where they do this transphysicality, where you move your you change your definition of self from one vehicle to another, and then begin looking through the eyes of that vehicle. And he said when he was there, he was looking up at the dragon, and he said there was no fear, even though it appeared there was fear before, there was no fear, and the dragon was looking down at him with the idea of, you know, I could snap you in two with my jaws. At that moment, he just leaned down and he kissed the dragon on the belly.
Oh.
And in the dream, and I believe that concluded the dream from what I can remember of his description, but there was a sense of peace and completion that came through it, and of course, one of the themes being by assuming that particular position and removing the fear aspect and embracing even the dragon part of us, we move along in the evolutionary scale. But this whole idea of this new technology of being able to change positions from your viewpoint, you know, realizing that we as individuals, all we are is a viewpoint, a point of perception.
Yeah.
And that we can view from here or from there or from everywhere. Like you said, I'm everywhere.
Right.
I'd like to add, Daniel, that the best way to do that is to have an anchor point in your physical body and in the earth itself versus going to these other viewpoints and departing from that anchor point. It's a completely different experience.
Now, how would you do that?
To remain firmly in your own concept of self and self-identity in a grounded sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, this thing that you mentioned about having an absence of fear. When there's fear present, it's very difficult to do that. because there's a lack of trust. There's a lack of trust for the earth plane and the earth itself, and even the physical body, because ultimately the information we get is that it dies, that it's faulty, that it can be diseased or get sick.
Or pain.
Kind of, and feeling pain, right? So there's this lack of trust. So as we move now, especially now, it's really important to practice grounding and really making a commitment to figuring out this thing, this what it feels like to be compressed into matter, and to not remember, not forget who we are. So in other words, to wake up again from the sleep that we've been in around who we are in a multidimensional and an expansive sense, where we could go anywhere and be anything and have any viewpoint like you're describing.
That the silver cord that they used to talk about in the astral travel studies,
yes,
now
yes,
has become this new belief that says, I'm everything and everything is me. That becomes your silver cord.
But you can see the difference between people who are just going with the possibilities and the probabilities that are out there versus those who remain in themselves and also go out there. So they're
absolutely
still tethered.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's
right.
The difference.
You know, this goes back to old-time philosophy, like the guys used to say, before you say something bad about someone, walk a mile in his shoes.
Right.
That way, you're when he finds out what you said, you're a mile away and you have his shoes.
You're so crazy. Well, because you even, to be honest, your wording, Daniel, when you were telling the story about the star child, you changed your verbiage from out of body to expanded body. And that is the difference between being, because when I first started this ascension process 14 years ago, I mean, I'll be honest with you, this was all about, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. Get me out of this plane. I was doing everything I could to leave my body. But then it started in my own healing. I was recognizing I was actually leaving my body. When I was molested as a kid, it brought me into have a sexual experience prior to my healing. What I was doing is my body was here and I was leaving.
Yeah.
So that there's no power in that. There's no savior in that.
Right.
There's havoc in that. Havoc. Total havoc. So
thought
I'd add a little personal detail there.
Well, that's important to express, and it's very it's very courageous of you to express that publicly.
And a lot of people out there are resonating. I know there are a lot
yeah.
who have had those initiations.
Absolutely,
early
that's why I share. That is definitely
because
I want people to know. Yes,
there's either trauma or judgment around these parts of us that basically snap off and go into the multidimensional realm, that fragment, and because it's too painful to sit with these pieces. The charge around them is too great. And again, it's either through trauma or judgment. But ultimately, we have to bring these pieces back. And that's what the healing's about.
Right, right. Well, because I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine. How can we express to people that this is my belief, I guess, at the moment, is we need to look at pain differently than we look at pain, because I believe pain is a friend, not an ally, not an enemy, because I believe pain is actually bringing us into the present moment. It brings us into the body. You know, it's very difficult to be out of body when you're aware of pain. Because pain brings you back in.
It tells you where to focus. The pain tells you where to focus.
Yeah. Can we talk about that a little? Because I think there's a lot of, you know, between pharmaceuticals. I mean, doctors are becoming the new dealers, in my personal opinion. I mean,
well, they've been doing that for a while.
We don't need to go. Street drugs, which is what I'm familiar with, had nothing on the side effects of these pharmaceuticals, you know, for the antidepression and how to go numb in 60 days or less. I mean, these are really shutting down some spiritual, you know, portals and conduits. That's my understanding of it anyways.
Well, you know, and when we have people going to the doctor, going to the psychiatrist or whatever, And they're in a state of, what they like to call disorder.
Right.
They're basically feeling things are not the way they're used to having them be. They're not normal. Now, oftentimes in American society, it's evolved to the point where normal means feeling no pain.
Right.
Or if they're in an athletic training mode, they still have this other kind of contradictory idea of no pain, no gain.
Right.
So you have that, you know. But it's like at least I'm choosing the time when the pain's administered and I know why I'm doing it. Then there are times when people become addicted to or tied into relationships and social situations where pain always seems to be the result, and they keep wondering, why does all this always happen to me? And that's where we get into the difference between the conscious and the subconscious, because in some situations there are some hidden things. You know, I call it a thorn in the soul.
Okay.
That's trying to be revealed, and you keep cycling through these pain situations in order for you to finally pay attention to whatever this element is that you decided you were going to overlook or bury. You know, it's a buried thing, but it's causing this pain.
Yeah.
And so some of the new definitions of normal, you might call numb-all, you know, let's numb-all. And if you use these drugs, it'll take away that, and it'll take away this. And the thing is some of the drugs do take away the pain, but they take away all sensation. You know, they take away the joy, too. So
right.
Then they've got this flat line.
And then we put Botox in, and we're really just walking zombies.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I just had to throw that in.
Well, and zombie movies have become very popular these days.
Especially where I live, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, okay, back to the pain. Yes.
The need to anesthetize around pain is an age-old issue even before the advent of drugs, which is resistance and unwillingness to stay present with something that's uncomfortable.
Yes.
And so, this is our greatest challenge. And so this is why, on one level or another, we're always distracting each other, or there's this underlying restlessness or this fidgety nature that we have, because just to sit in the present moment is an incredible threat to the ego, because it experiences that moment of presence, which is ultimately just clear, open space, as a threat. And so this whole process of entrainment can begin when we decide that we're not going to run away from that anymore, and we start to examine the futility of running away from anything that causes us discomfort or pain, not just physical pain, but emotional pain and subtle pain too, that real subtle pain that invades your psyche, that invades your consciousness, that prevents you from being in the present moment and getting familiar with the present moment. In a friendly way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the now.
Yeah, I had a therapist once say to me, go ahead, Daniel.
Oh, no, I'm just, go ahead.
I just, to summarize what you beautifully just stated, Robert, a therapist once said to me, pain won't kill you. Running from your pain, that'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Pain
and
itself
it
won't kill you.
And
right.
It does.
Right.
So, you know, we've all got this going on one level or another, so we're pretty much in the same boat, but I feel that at this time there is a heightened need to address this, because this can become the pain, the discomfort, the restlessness can become our ally in discovering precisely how we're wired and the things that we ultimately need to encounter. Now, the bad news here, of course, is that this is all choice-based. We have the freedom of will to not encounter this if we desire. We can push it, we can put it off, we can push it off. Now, oftentimes that creates more suffering in a person's life. But in a multi-incarnational sense, there's no spiritual imperative that I know of that exists that suggests that you have to deal with your stuff in any particular life. Mind you, that which is not healed follows you into the next. So there's a real strong incentive to get busy now.
Right.
Now,
go
ahead.
No, you. I'm here all the time. I want to hear you.
when we talk about the masculine and feminine, you know, we look at the idea of the universe that we are using as a launching pad for this ascension has as its basis a hyper-masculine view. We've come through centuries
mm-hmm.
of being in our heads, rationality,
left brain
laws and rules, and using that left brain, science, you know, we've made
mm-hmm.
science into a religion, which there's nothing wrong with that. There's a sense in which everything has a right to be worshipped because everything is awesome, you know,
mm-hmm.
and everything could
mm-hmm.
have a temple all its own. But in very many ways, you know, if you begin talking metaphysics or you talk about spiritual principles, the hyper-masculine establishment tends to roll its eyes and say, oh, woo-woo, that's where we get the woo-woo statements.
Right.
But as we begin to open to the idea of feeling and intuition and particularly that sense of things, of change, where we don't maybe have any proof for it, but we have a sense that it's happening.
Yes.
That's where we begin to bring things back into balance from this hyper-masculine state. I did a series on the website once called A Man in a Can, you know. And basically it was a picture of a knight, you know, the knight with shining armor.
Yeah.
But he's still in a can, you know, and he's valued because he doesn't have to deal with all the personal inner needs. His purpose is to serve with selflessness and without any idea of self. And this has been our ideal as a hero.
Right, right.
Which is changing.
And, then,
and mothers, you just described mothers.
Mothers are the same. See, mothers are supposed to be like the fathers. Father's role is to protect the family against all things and to do that selflessly. The mother
right.
is supposed to have that kind of love for her children.
Serve the family, right, above and beyond anything, serve the family.
And, of course, the disagreement, of course, is that there's a lot between whether she's to obey her husband or whether they have to work things out in a negotiative way or whatever, and there's lots of stuff going down over that.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that what we think of as the great shift of energies is the reintroduction of the divine feminine back into the primary spectrum of what's worthwhile and what has authority in this paradigm. So as we think more and more of bringing this back in, there are ramifications that happen in the personalities, and we're talking about that as far as sexuality. We're talking about it when it comes down to how we govern. I mean, there are people now who are looking at a president who's in the White House, who's supposed to be in touch with the people, who not only has a wife and two daughters there to influence him, but he has his mother-in-law living in there as well, you know. So here's a
that
man.
That sounded like a Fred Flintstone reference.
Here's a man who's basically, he's not going to get by without having some feminine influence, you know. It's like, it's
right,
very,
right.
very new paradigm.
Right.
Oh, well, no, you don't think all presidents have had their wives? I mean, I clearly think Hillary was an influence, and Eleanor Roosevelt was. I mean, there have
well,
been.
Well, yeah, there
know.
Are those who don't particularly think of Hillary as an example of femininity.
That's true.
You know, so they're saying
that's
that,
true.
You know, basically,
yeah,
they were
true.
Political partners, even though she was a female gender-wise.
Right.
There are
right.
those who say whether or not she was what was a femininity is something else, but
that's true. That's
we
true.
Really are seeing an evolution now, a main theme towards bringing this into the picture. But at the same time, you've got this other side of the political spectrum that's fighting against that and trying to say, you know, let's get back to our basic principles. Let's get back to our rules. Let's get back to the Constitution that they think has been violated, et cetera.
Well, they wanted the way it was because they're like, it was. I had this argument with my dad today. He goes, you know, it's coming back. It was working. And I'm like, you know, I mean, he's 76 years old. And I'm like, you know, what part of this system do you think was working? I get here, you know, in our little house in Connecticut, it works. But when you look at the rest of the planet, come on, Dad, this is clearly a system that is not working. From an ecosystem point of view, humanity is just whacked and out of balance. I mean, we are just completely out of balance.
What we're looking at is the end of the patriarchal experiment. And this is not the first one that has existed on this planet.
Right.
So it's being dismantled. We talked about this a little bit the other day in our conversation.
Yeah.
But it's you know, this time is different than any time before it. Now, it's also important to keep in mind that since the beginning of human consciousness on the planet, there's been this leapfrog thing that's gone on where, and these are just rough numbers, but about, you know, basically 10,000 years of patriarchal domination, followed by 10,000 years of matriarchal influence, followed by 10,000 years of patriarchal domination. This thing going over and over and over again. And again, these are just experiments, because we have to remember as well that Gaia, the soul energy of the planet, has been on her own path of evolution and growth.
Okay.
And she needed to do this. So what makes this time different is that the answer to the patriarchal problem is not just in the feminine. The
right.
answer is in the masculine and the feminine.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of work to do, because not only do we have to bring these two things into balance, We have to transform toxic male energy into divine male energy, toxic female energy into divine female energy, and basically bring these two into harmony within. And
yeah.
That's the real prompting that I see at this time. It's not about going out there and staging, you know, political reform or, you know, changing things spiritually or religiously. It's about going within and understanding, you know, really having an intimate contact with this within ourselves and seeing how these things play out. And once we do that, again, the tendency to project it onto, you know, some situation out there in the world that we are being victimized by is going to be far diminished as a result of taking that level of responsibility. So we're pioneers in a way, because we haven't done this before. But with the incoming energies of the new planetary body in 2012, we have to get it together. I mean, we have to have some kind of relative balance going on, individually and collectively, both, to retain our right to be here as a species.
Brilliantly stated, Robert. I agree wholeheartedly.
And one of the
whole
big factors
brain and whole
on
heart.
That. One of the big factors on that is we can no longer put all our emphasis and all the eggs in our basket on the idea of politics as being the solution. Politics,
yes.
Politics has been humanity's way of delegating to other people. You do it. You get it
yeah.
done.
Exactly.
We'll elect
you.
You
we'll take
pay
authority
you.
For
we'll
me.
Yeah.
You
take this and you solve it for me, and I'm going to just sit back here and continue being stupid, you know, and dependent. There's a difference between being submissive, open, and cooperative, and just being flat out stupid. And
yeah.
We're starting to learn that. I mean, people are learning that left and right. But if you look at politics, even as glorious as the beginning of this year has, or last year was, with the inauguration of our first black president and so on, that
right.
was all glorious, and the hope that filled people's heart. There's a reason for all that, but it wasn't because he was going to swing in on a grapevine and do all this. I mean, he even told
exactly.
us that. He says, this isn't going to be about me, what I do. He says,
he's still just a man trying to run a country that, you know, is the people in the country have to start becoming responsible for who they are contributing to the country.
But, I mean, they don't even realize, even when he says that, I don't know that he totally realizes when he talks about responsibility what a metaphysician might call responsibility. Because when you look at your world and say, that's me, that's my creation, that's who I am,
mm-hmm.
I'm no longer just a person. I'm not living in the world, I am the world. Now,
right.
that's a big chunk. There's a lot different than saying, well, my party is in control now, so we've got to make social changes.
Yeah, uh-uh. That's a quantum chunk.
You've got to go way down deep into your socks, way down there, and it's got to penetrate. And if it doesn't, then people, many of them, are going to dry up like leaves and blow away. But I'll tell you what,
I'm okay with that.
The nonverbal ones, there are many quiet people who are evolving deeply on deep levels. There are people who are doing the work, what we call grid work, that are really, really, they're staying up working half the night, sometimes, you know, all night, doing this deep inner meditation, mystical work. There's stuff being done, and we're on the verge and on the brink.
We are.
And I also believe that these are people that are kind of planted, like, everywhere in life. That, like, when these beings that are drying up because they're just so resistant to the change that, you know, this is I believe this change is happening within us, you know, and we are learning how to navigate now with, like, new tools of becoming androgynous. And, like, you know, the new tool of androgyny is, what's your passion? What brings you joy? Not, you know, okay, you're a girl, okay, so then your college choices are nurse or secretary. You know, it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to fly planes? Do you want to, you know, whatever you want to do, that's what comes with self-responsibility, everything.
Right.
The choice to be and to do and to have anything you want is yours because, you know, like you beautifully stated, Daniel, you're not in the world, you are the world. Where do you want to play and express yourself? That is, it's such an exciting time. I'm so excited about this.
And it is exciting because it's exciting and it can also be overwhelming because we're coming out of this very closed state into a completely open state that says anything is possible. Well, that can drive a lot of people into overwhelm. Where the definition, having a limited definition of self, you don't really have to think that much. You just basically perform.
Yeah.
And so now not only are we discovering that, you know, our personal inner expression of male and female energy can change day to day, hour to hour, moment to moment, that can influence our career decisions, you know, our relationship decisions, everything we do.
Absolutely.
But So, you know, with that, we have to go, okay, well, I don't want to just float from day to day and have a different self-definition or a different professional definition, or maybe you do. I don't know if that lack of consistency might gain you that much, but is to anchor any number of these things and explore what they are, which is much more representative of a being who is aware of their multidimensional nature versus one that is stuck in the three-dimensional paradigm where the compression is so great that it looks like choice A, B, or C.
Yes, totally.
So as we get into these new ideas, we start talking about how then shall we be in the light of these types of things, and that's really the level where we need to launch off on the show tonight, is what now do I do with this? Now, one of the big things that comes out of it is with this shifting of identities and shifting of allegiance and identification with one or the other or both, there has to be correspondent shifts in how people do what they do. So chances are there's going to be purposeful programming in each individual's life for them to tackle certain things that they perhaps resisted in other life contexts or even at earlier times in this life context.
Right.
Can you give an example? What do you mean by that? Because
Well, for example, we talk about gender, you know. When the reconnections, the sector on the website about spirituality, sex, gender, and relationships is expansive. There's lots of stuff out there. And if you come to www.reconnections.net, there's a ton of information there about this. Basically, the idea being is that whatever you came in with anatomically is symbolic of what you have at this point in time avoided completely mastering. So if I come in, I come in anatomically set for a masculine identity, what it means is that my first karmic lesson is to learn how to function from that initiative energy, that initiative choice-making, decision-making force. And then once I do that, once I'm able to master that, then I'm able to move beyond that and balance it by bringing in the idea of the feminine source. And so there will be opportunities for that to happen. Like a man, you know, he may be in a marriage, for example, with a woman. So he's playing the role of masculine in the household, and the woman is playing traditional role at home. But when he goes to work, he may have a boss that's taking the masculine position with him, and he has to be feminine in relationship to that boss.
Right.
And so at that point in time, he begins to understand, okay, now I've got to first learn the idea of how to be what my anatomy suggests I am, and then once I do that, then I can move over into the other thing and be effective. But if a fellow is anatomically indicated that he's got to learn how to initiate, how to protect, how to focus, and so on, things that are suggestive of masculine energy, and he tries to skip over and forget that and be the other side first, well, you can do it under the idea of saying, well, it's oneness and we're all androgynous. But you've got to move past your anatomical karmic lesson in order to get to that other side. Because if you skip that, then you're missing out on an important element that would teach you how to be balanced. And so,
well, and isn't that the part that stables you in the body, in the planet? You know, that's
yeah, it's whatever your anatomy suggests you're going to be. Now, we do have people who have anatomies that suggest both.
Right.
We do
right.
have, as you say, hermaphrodites.
Right.
And therein is sort of like a symbolic statement to humanity. You have a choice because,
right.
And there's been many popular TV shows recently, particularly medical TV shows, where it's been presented with the idea that there is a person who's born with the body of a boy but really wants to be a girl and vice versa. And they
right.
go through all the family ramifications and what the parents, how they react and what the doctor has to say. It's an interesting kind of a symbol, but there yet is another symbol. Then we have the idea of people who believe that they were born in the wrong body and they want to be what they aren't,
right.
and make that shift. And there's a whole bunch of symbols and learning there. It's a big task we're about right now, and a lot
it,
of definite...
it is, Daniel. And you know, there's a couple things here that pop up for me as you describe these things. The confusion around essence and form, for one thing. For instance, a male form, female form, or a balanced form. Versus what might be going on an essential level within that individual. And then the other thing around these karmic overlays that you were talking about, which basically predisposes an individual to do that work and discover an expression of masculinity or femininity in a male or a female body. And what I found a lot in my work is that it's not necessarily a direct connection between the gender and the energy that person is learning about. So what I mean by that is that there's a lot of souls who come into female bodies in this lifetime, and they're still trying to work out the male energy, but this time they're doing it in female form, right? To allow them to perhaps gain a different perspective on that male energy that the karma is around. So the karma can be composed of course many lives. Where they could have been men and women both, with a developing judgment around the male energy. For instance, as an example, we have equated power with maleness, especially over the last 10,000 years. And a lot of men have suffered from that, but surely a lot of women have suffered from that. But they could have also come to the same conclusion in female form that maleness equals power. So they're born into a female body this time, and I can look at their 10th house, and I can tell you they have to learn about what it is to take power in the world the way a man would, or you know, in the former conclusion that was drawn that that power equals maleness, only this time in the female body. So it's still the karma. You can't get away from it. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Wow, you just brought up a because I mean, I honor what you're saying, but I disagree that we can't get away from karma. I think there's always the choice to get off of the karma wheel. Isn't that the whole idea of birth and death and that cyclical energy that this lifetime we have the opportunity to come out of?
Yes,
well,
we do.
You know, the way karma was sold to us in the religious sense was more utilitarian to those who were selling the religion than the actual spiritual reality of karma. The way I look at karma is I simply see karma as a natural result of one force encountering another force, like dropping a stone in the water and watching the ripples go out from the stone. You know, that's
right.
That's a natural recourse of what happens. That's as far as we really need to look at with karma. When you start to think in terms of sins and payment for sins and laws and
guilt and shame
and vengeance,
yeah.
And so on. Those are different things altogether, and that's a lot of manipulative political religious stuff, you know, that doesn't necessarily.
We also do that to ourselves, though, whether or not it's been forced upon us. Our natural sense of guilt will do that. Like, in other words, I did something wrong and I have to pay for it, which, by the way, I do not believe is an accurate description of what karma is.
Right,
exactly. As far as getting off this karmic wheel, there is a way to do that, and I think that we can do that more easily now than we ever have because it's easier to let go of patterns now than it has been in the past.
Yes.
For instance, you know, it might have taken us, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years in therapy to work something out and really move beyond it. These days, it might take 3 or 4 or 5 months, or maybe 3 or 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So we really are. There is a great acceleration going on that is, you know, promoting the shedding of karma quickly. However, you cannot avoid your karma in the sense of the thing that you have judged about yourself, and it's not so much the deed. In fact, karma is not really related to deed. It's about the judgment about the deed that was created from the standpoint of ego while still alive. That's where the karma is created. You can do whatever you want here. Clearly, that's what goes on physical plane, on the earth plane. Everybody's doing what they want, whether light or dark, and we've all done it all. We have to remember that. So we can't really judge anybody else. It's this whole notion of judging what we've done. And creating an identity around that judgment that creates the karmic overlay. So it's the very thing that follows us into successive lives that we basically have to love into consciousness. And until we do that, it's with you. You cannot shed it.
Right.
Now, it's interesting. Okay. You talk about power, for example. When someone arrives as a woman, and yet her karmic thing that she's dealing with is with power. And so then I think the real point that you made that was so pristine and must not be missed is the idea that the equation of masculinity with power sort of pre-assumes that there's no power with femininity.
Correct.
And what we're thinking, you know, her assignment was to learn about power, but her physical vehicle suggests that the pathway to learn about power is through femininity rather than, which would be through response and receptivity versus initiation and forward
action.
Movement, see?
Right.
So it's always been my contention that people who talk about feminine power and the goddess really, for the most part, have no concept of the power of the feminine when it's functioning in its purest sense. Because we're not talking about sexual allure. We're not talking about the ability for a woman to talk up a man and make him feel wonderful so he gives her gifts and stuff like that.
Right.
What we're basically talking about is a sense of sensitivity and openness and almost a magnetic kind of attractiveness that draws people in and nurtures them and makes them feel warm to such a degree that they then become safe to be who they are.
Right.
To be able to create a nurturing space. That power is so missing in this world today.
Yes.
And yet has so much more effectiveness than attack and warfare. We're learning that big time.
And similarly, Daniel, it's not that that very beautiful description of female energy is not just the domain of women. And that's the other thing we have to remember.
Yes, exactly. Beauty and sensitivity does not have to be just female.
Cause
you don't have to be labeled as less than a man if you show it.
You're more of a god. If you're less than a man, it's only because you're more of a god.
So that, we have to understand some of the fundamentals here, which is that the female energy on its own can create nothing, and that the male energy on its own can create nothing. They need each other.
Right.
And this, again, it comes back to this a willingness to personally and collectively stop projecting that other force onto first the gender, but onto anyone else, and to explore that dynamic within yourself and understand, in order for you to be sensitive and nurturing, you don't have to be a woman. In order for you to be powerful, you don't have to be a man. And that's where you start to really step into some true personal power, because these things have always been a part of you. You have been creating from this place, whether you knew it or not, with, a relative degree of success or failure. But still, everything you create, it has to do with your relationship with these two forces that we, in a misunderstanding, through misunderstanding, assign to a particular gender. This has become history quickly.
When he talks like that, don't your earlobes get erect? It's just like, yeah.
I can definitely feel his passion. And I can feel everyone's passion on the air tonight.
He flies right through there with that, and your earlobes go, yeah. Give me some of that.
It's 100 degrees in my house right now. Nothing's getting erect. I'm sweating like a... No, I'll stop right there. I'm going to open the door. But,
you're going that to get more than
balance.
The earlobes erect here, kid.
Well, so the audience knows, when me, Daniel, and Robert first had our conference call, at one point we were all joking that I'm actually a gay man incarnate in a female body, and that both Daniel and Robert were lesbian incarnate in male bodies. And, because there's so much, there's truth to, the whole idea of, I love that there's this, divine intelligence behind everything, so that, if we are either male or female, or and the challenges that lie in front of us and at our feet for us to handle, when we start opening up ourselves to exactly what you're saying about embodying both aspects of masculine and feminine, the answers will just unfold so naturally. And answers being a resolution to that which is painful, answers to being resolution to that which is, not serving us anymore, even though just a shift, maybe a small shift in consciousness will open it up, that it all makes sense, and it's beautiful and it's joyful. I mean, like I had a shift when I realized my program initially told me happiness would come when I found the love of my life, quote unquote, the soulmate that would make my life better. And I say it like that because most of my soulmates have clearly brought me pain and strife, because that's where my growth took place at the time, because that's how I needed to learn, because I didn't even know joy at that time. I mean, my joy was, still being drug induced. Where now it hit me, just one day it hit me, I went, if I'm waiting for the love of my life to come before I actually experience love, look at all that I'm missing from my friendships, and look at all I'm missing from the love I receive from nature. Look at all the love that I'm receiving from, you know, just breathing in a deep breath. It's like, you know, it's like we just shift our consciousness, and then all of a sudden, that which we think we need to go out and get, all of a sudden has this blossom awareness. It's already inside of us. It's already here.
And to try to extract it from someone else is a subtle form of exploiting them.
Yes.
When in fact you can be giving that to yourself, and this is it. I mean, so let's just say that this is a new prototype for maleness and femaleness. And the joke that we all shared the other day about being, you know, gay men in women's bodies and gay women in men's bodies is still connected to the conventional terminology of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
So the new prototype suggests that it's not an anomaly. It's there's no reversal happening. It's absolutely natural. It's just that very few people have allowed themselves to go there again because of the gripping fear that they are going to be rejected if they step outside of the fundamental imprint and the conditioning that goes around that. Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to something that Daniel brought up earlier, which was, and you did as well, Goldie, is how do we do this? How do we do this?
Mm,
we can talk
yeah.
about it. Okay, talking about it is one thing. But we want to go beyond just the talk. You know,
okay.
we want to be able to convert we want to convert heightened awareness into heightened functioning. And that's the critical link that most of us miss out on. You know, and when you look at a lot of very brilliant people out there, how they are still living their lives will tell you whether or not that conversion has occurred.
Yes.
So my suggestion is it takes two pieces, right? And one is more masculine, one is more male, and one is more female.
Mm-hmm.
The first part is to me really, really important, is to have sort of a detached curiosity around exploring who you are. Just pretend that you don't know at all.
Mm.
Start that way, right? Innocence, we're talking about a childlike kind of innocence. The other piece you're going to need is more the male feature of this, which is the courage. And that piece will allow you to put a foundation under these things that you find and start to bring them into manifestation. Those two things. But it takes practice, like anything. Everything takes practice because we are trying to imprint this on a cellular level, and it takes repetition for that as long as we're in a physical body. Now, mind you, like I said earlier, it doesn't take as long now, so we can learn
right.
things more quickly,
right.
and that's the good news. That should be encouraging to people. So as we find these things, we go, you know something? I love that piece of myself that I just explored. I want that to become a regular day-to-day experience for me that I can share with other people. However, what it's going to do is it's going to threaten my family. It's going to threaten my own concept of self because of all of the other conditioning that I've been playing out for 20 or 30 or 40 years.
Right.
And so I'm going to really need this courage piece so that I can go basically into the studio and practice this every day.
Yeah.
So that I can become it can become a masterful expression of this fluctuating energies within me.
In one of my series that I wrote about love and the one, so to speak, called The Next Level, it speaks in there about this thing of love being like a butterfly. And there was even a song back, I guess, in the 60s or 70s called The Elusive Butterfly of Love. And the idea being is that we see this wonderful creature fly by and it lands on something. And we look at it and we say, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that incredible? And, of course, there's a difficulty in differentiating between the thing the butterfly landed on and the butterfly itself. Because when the butterfly is sitting there, the whole thing sort of lights up.
Yeah.
And then, in a way, the butterfly will fly off into something else. But you still have that memory in your mind of the fact that the butterfly was there. And so you say, I'm going to take that statue and I'm going to put it in the front room of my house. I want everybody to see that statue. And when they come, I'm going to talk to them about the day the butterfly landed on that statue. in a way, that's sort of how it happens when we have a romantic experience with someone, where we might have had the best time we've ever had with them. Circumstances happen, even the most challenging time we've ever had. Maybe we were people who were trapped in a boat and had to risk our lives to save each other, and when we got out of it, a bond formed and we ended up being married or whatever. The point being is that people are always, with butterflies, are always trying to grab a net and contain them.
Yeah.
And we like to have them up on walls, you know, with little pins in them, and we say, see that butterfly? That butterfly was, you know, once upon a time, boom, you know.
Right.
The point
right.
being is that when you try to contain that and you put it into one thing, you try to identify that with this, what you end up is with a monument with dust on it and the pins in it and no movement, no life.
Right.
And when we think about this, happens with relationships all the time. You know, you get together with someone and you have this wonderful time and you say, oh, you're the one, you're it, you know, it's here, I see it. And so you find a way, and many of these institutions we put together, marriage and
Daniel, you're kind of coming in and out a little bit. I don't know if you're walking away or if you're on a cordless phone.
No, I have a landline. Is that better?
That's better, yeah.
Okay, so we have these institutions where we want to grab this and we want to make it official. We want to make it permanent. A very wise woman once said, and I forget her name at this point, but I've put lots of quotes of her on the site. She said, a husband is what's left of a lover after the nerve has been extracted.
Oh, wow.
And this is a very, very wise woman who understands. I mean, another phrase she said is, when you're dating, a man will sit up half the night thinking of something you said. After you're married, he goes to sleep before you're finished saying it.
Right.
You know,
right.
And what's true about that is that we try to put ourselves into a position that said, look, I loved this experience we had. I loved this year we had. I loved these 2 years we had. I want the rest of my life to be like that.
Exactly.
And we forget that the elusive butterfly of love, you know, it flits and flies around. It goes from thing to thing, and it doesn't always necessarily stay on this person.
Well, this goes for everything, Daniel, not just love and relationships.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, what you're talking about is the ego's response to pleasure. It wants to immediately bring continuity to it so it can continue to feel pleasure and not pain.
Yeah.
But then we're still in binary mind when we do that, which is pleasure and pain, right?
Right.
And so we're, you know, the grasping for pleasurable things and the repulsion from painful things is a circuitry that we need to step out of, and we can step out of. As long as we're in, and it's governed by the hypothalamus gland, as long as we're in that circuitry, we are going to be enslaved there. When we can pull back and have more of a neutral response to what we're experiencing, then it's more easy for us to go into unity mind, which allows us to have a detached relationship with that pleasurable thing and not try and kill it. Your metaphor was perfect, you know, kill it, stick a pin through it and put it on the wall, because that's exactly what happens. And you know, what you're talking about there is a feature of brittle, sort of a brittle male energy that wants to capture this thing and in doing so kills it. Kills the essence of it.
Exactly.
So,
isn't that kind of the basis of addiction?
Well, sort of, yeah, you might say.
There's,
and I say that meaning chasing that elusive first hit, you know. God knows I know that one.
Yeah.
You know, it's never as good. The first hit is always the best, and then you chase that for the rest of the time.
That's usually driven by a desire to get out of one's pain and having an experience that at least temporarily proved to you that you could.
Side of pleasure.
Yeah. Or it's negative pleasure, because the second chakra receives everything as interprets everything as pleasure. So if
really?
If it's been wired with pain, then we will seek the that imprint as a way of feeding the second chakra its pleasure, you know, whether it's positive or negative pleasure.
Okay. Oh,
well, and then
wow.
we go back to the phrase that says, I hit myself in the head with a hammer because it feels so good when I stop.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So there's that shifting back and forth, too. And there are people out there who actually have built a kind of a religion or at least a community around the idea of working with pain and pleasure and kind of dancing back and forth across that line. And I did a series on that called Out of Our Heads and Into Our Senses, where I had a spiritual dominatrix who actually helped with the article, and she began to talk a little bit about what they call the lifestyle, or BDSM, which is this whole dance back and forth between pleasure and pain, and how a lot more people, if they were to look deep into their psyche, are in love with pain than they really are willing to admit.
Everybody does to an extent, Daniel. You're right. We all have a have a feature of us that is expressed through subtle or overt forms of masochism. And so again, this is just this is sort of the treasure chest that we get to dive into. And look at
Can I stop you for 1 minute? Because just for a second, because if we all have this, is it something we need to overcome, or do we just need to accept it?
I think
yes.
It depends.
Yes,
I mean,
both questions.
You can keep in mind.
Okay, that was easy.
There are no imperatives here. There's no spiritual imperatives. If you want to keep playing a cycle out, a cycle of masochism out, that's your right. You can do that. In the end, to wake up from that might be a very liberating thing to do. But sometimes we will play that out for more, a lifetime or a series of lifetimes until we get the message that we're doing it to ourselves. And that it's all self-generated, and by doing this, we have isolated ourselves from the beauty of interacting with life.
Yeah. You guys, this is such a powerful show. Thank you both. I will thank you again at the top of the hour. But this is a really powerful show, and you guys are brilliant, and I'm honored to be speaking with you tonight. Thank you. This is hot.
Oh, just stroke a Leo. You know, I'm a Leo. So.
No, but you have no idea how many conversations I have in my personal, inner circle about these topics that were topics, and I don't always necessarily know. It's like okay, because like you just said, so do we overcome it or do we accept it? It's like yes. It's like oh wow, yeah, there it is.
Whatever's
okay.
There to be done. Sometimes you overcome it. Sometimes you accept it. For example, it's true from a psychological standpoint that it's very popular for doctors to say, okay, your masochism is something that you eventually will want to move beyond. But they've never had a good, solid conversation with someone in the lifestyle, because if they did, they would understand that what we call masochism to someone in the lifestyle is...
It's pleasure.
It's a serious understatement of what they're talking about. You're talking about dancing back and forth across the dividing line and actually blurring the experience of pleasure and pain so that it becomes more pliable, more flexible, to the point where you can really get into passion in certain circumstances, and they put together what they call scenes, or they put together what they call experiences in their clubs, where they do things designed to invoke the power that is hidden in either pleasure or pain, and in some instances to bring it to a place where it erupts into pure, undefinable emotion. And when I did the series of articles, it wasn't because I was particularly interested in joining the lifestyle or anything. It was because the reconnection said, when I first met this young lady, there's something here you need to understand, and if you understand this, your work and your writing will get bigger. And at the time, I was putting them out on mailing lists, and people were writing me letters going, are you crazy?
Right.
Well, no, this makes sense, Daniel, because the worst thing that can happen to somebody is to have that information trapped or locked, for instance, in the second chakra. By doing these practices that you just described that involve other people, it's a way of mobilizing that energy and mobilizing that information so that it moves out of the second chakra so it can be dealt with, so it can be understood. That is brilliant. I think the instinct to do that is very, very powerful. But the other thing that can happen, of course, and we always have to be on guard for the ego here, is that the ego can get hold of it and create an identity around it and then lock that into place, right? So then the growth stops.
And we have to watch that when we go to therapists and psychologists who would try to liberate us from our essential masochism, because they've become, in some instances, locked into the identity of what they call normal, and what they call normal may not be health at all from the viewpoint of certain people. And so you go to a marriage counselor who thinks that his goal is to keep the marriage together, or you go to a regular shrink who thinks his goal is to help you practice missionary sex positions and liberate you from these things these urges that you have, and it might be that you're actually entering into a bondage that's even deeper than the bondage you crave and you're inside your fascination for your imagination.
Right.
So this brings up another point that I think is really interesting, and this is more of a question for me. When we are really grappling in our own shadow and in our darkness, where it seems that it's almost an airtight situation, like no light can come in, what is it? What is it that happens? I think this is a really good question to ask. What is it that happens that something happens where there's a shift, in a subtle shift in consciousness, sometimes a profound shift, where all of a sudden we start thinking about it differently, and it allows us to step outside of this cycle that seems like it would just go on forever into the future if there wasn't that kind of grace that moved in. And we look at this and we start to wonder, is it a feature of this person's consciousness that got through? Or because they seem completely shackled by this environment that's causing them to suffer and suffer and suffer again. What is it that happens that all of a sudden there's a change?
Yeah. Isn't that the God equation, isn't it?
Yeah, transformative experience. A lot of times, well, Jung, for example, Carl Jung, often said that religion is a defense against what he called a religious or spiritual experience. And just like education can sometimes be a defense against new learning.
Yeah.
Because you go to school and you spend hours and dollars and you get your master's and then your doctorate and you put a piece of paper on the wall, and that entitles you to say, this is the way it is. But anytime you say, this is the way it is, you are shutting out the possibility of all those other ways that it also could be.
And so in that instance, education
can sometimes be a stone in your way that blocks your progress.
Anything can, Daniel. I mean, that's the point. And again, we're talking about the male energy that's become ossified that does that to the essential energy, which is the female aspect of that relationship. And immediately you're not learning anymore in an environment that was supposed to provide you with education, or you're not healing anymore in an environment that was supposed to provide you with growth and healing. And so, again, we just have to constantly check in with the male and female to see what they're doing and what expressions of each are playing out. And this is why I really promote the education, fundamental education of this vocabulary, so that a person can understand what feature of them is expressing itself and whether or not that feature is, let's just say, more toxic than it is healthy or more healthy than it is toxic. And that's where your work is. So, I mean, this is why everything, all the old forms are getting blown out at the seams right now, because they simply cannot contain the new energies that are coming in. They're not flexible enough.
What do you guys think about the concept of humility and how it plays in our lives?
I'm going to let you have that one.
Oh, all right.
How humble of you, Daniel.
Well, you know,
I'm
going to
humbly defer to you on that.
Okay, well, I was about to humbly defer to you, Daniel, but I think I will take that. I'll take your lead there.
Well, I think a lot of what people say is humility.
Okay.
Is actually hiding behind a repression inside themselves when they actually do have something that wants to come out, but they're holding it back under the guise of humility because they're saying, I either don't deserve to say or do this, or it's not the right time, or who am I to say this? But in actuality, they're really just scared to say who they are and be who they are, but they hide it under a veil of humility.
Well,
wouldn't that actually not be humility then? Because, like, what is humility?
He's actually, Daniel just gave us the, basically the inverse description.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, humility is a beautiful word, and even when you spoke the word, it has a resonance in my heart. It has a lot to do with having a reverence for everything in life and everything about
mm-hmm.
yourself included that is sacred. It's interesting, you hear people oftentimes throw this phrase around, nothing is sacred, you know, or to me, nothing is sacred, and this is sort of like this sort of cowboy, cavalier way of describing or, you know, how they relate to something. But, you know, for me, everything is sacred. And when we start to look at things that way, and approach things through this reverence, which doesn't make us smaller. The old version of, I think, humility and reverence was that you bowed your head and you somehow became smaller than the thing that you were revering.
Right.
It's this thing where the real reverence there is feeling the connectedness between yourself and this thing that you revere and the removal of judgment. So it doesn't matter what it is, you know, even these things that are typically termed negative or things that you want to avoid, you want to bring this kind of humility to them because you understand it's all important and it's all part of the whole and it's all part of you and it's reflecting you. So that to me is my core approach to this idea or this concept or this energy of humility. Is trying to find, and I have to blast through many layers of ego to do this, mind you, oftentimes, mm-hmm. right? Because my ego response to things is basically giving me information that is anything but humility. And
it's
so
arrogant,
I know this because
I'm battling it. And
yeah,
you are literally answering my question. This is because I'm like, all my life I'm told to be good, because that will equate to success. And then just like we were talking about how the education of something can stifle the learning, I'm recognizing my arrogance is standing in my way, and I'm going, okay, but what exactly was humility? And Robert, bless your soul, you have really gave me tremendous clarity with that answer. So, I mean, thank you both. That was...
You're welcome.
That's hot, man. I'm just telling you, everything about this show is hot, including the temperature in my house.
Of course, now you shot all his humility to hell. You know, he's going to be big-headed.
No, not at all. Reverence, that's it. It's the because for me, like you were saying, humility always came across to me as like, okay, that means what? That means I got to turn the other cheek. I got to accept that, you know, you're just treating me like poo-poo. I don't want to accept that. And I'm learning that. See, reverence for something says, I see behind the physical into your essence, but in my own reverence for self, I don't have to play in the sandbox with somebody else who wants to throw sand in my eyes. I can walk away from that.
Or you can remain playing with them, and because you have this awareness, what they're doing is not affecting you. In other words, you might be there and
turn the other cheek. That's challenging for me.
Well, somebody
really
from the
is.
Outside might look at you and say, well, she's just letting herself be abused. Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying, but don't take the energy of that.
Well, once you move into, again, if you look at that situation, which is difficult, right? Because you're being threatened in that moment.
Right.
If you look at that situation through a form of sacred reverence, then you start to see that the information around what the lesson is then can come to you. And then again, if you're in this push-pull relationship with pleasure and pain, and if you're in your ego and this person's hurting me and I shouldn't be allowing this to happen, you won't be able to gain the detachment that will allow you to stay there and let that thing go on and be unaffected by it. And that's when we move into mastery, true mastery, when we can do that.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to bring up this idea, if we've finished with humility here, I don't want to cut that off. I wanted to bring up this idea of this transformation as it's happening in our society about the masculine particularly. Years and years ago when I took my first formal class on metaphysics, the teacher was a wonderful 300-pound woman. She was a double Leo, a lesbian.
Oh, God.
And let's just say that she was she didn't have any problems expressing herself. And she, she said the definition of ascension or the timing of ascension during this new paradigm is not going to be when women find their masculinity. It's going to be more when men find their femininity, because we're in a hyper-masculine environment already. So as you begin to see the masculine begin to find its balancing force, that will be the time when we know that this ascension is really, we're really on the launching pad and we're ready to go.
Right.
So what I was thinking about recently, what's been coming out on TV, on the talk shows, and among the people who are, you might call the buzzword makers of our society,
mm-hmm.
the talk show hosts and the pundits and people, they're talking a lot about these man crushes or a woman crush on a woman, But
mm-hmm.
it's particularly significant when men start talking about man crushes,
Right.
And another word they use is a bromance. They call it a bromance, which I think is very cute. But it gets to a place where it says, two men begin to understand each other and relate to each other in an affectionate way, in an admiring way, and they do it out front. It used to be that one of the greatest expressions of love a man could give you would be to come up and insult you or whack you one, and that would that was the way that men showed that they liked each other. It was sort of a backhanded kind of a way to do it. But nowadays, you actually see these guys who are up to saying, I've got a man crush on you, and they'll say it. And the guy doesn't necessarily define himself at all as a homosexual. He's basically saying, I see that attribute of maleness in you that I admire, and I give reverence to it.
Exactly.
So what's
But I do think it's even
that.
Showing up physically too. I mean, I see the men doing those like male hugs with their got their hand to over their heart, but they bring each other close to each other. I see it a lot in the black community, anyways. So.
And in Europe, it's not at all unusual for men to kiss each other and have
exactly.
it completely open and no problem. I mean. Over here, if you bump up against someone on a subway train, they can still react as if you're trying to molest them, But over in Europe, people are a lot.
Yeah, our culture is whacked when it comes to the body. Sell everything through the physical, and then we shame it and degrade it, through the mental. It's such a contradicting message.
So we get so much into the body, 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 So. But the point being is that the conversation when we talk about the masculine and feminine integration or balancing doesn't come so much about the idea of who you have sex with. I mean, sex in many ways has been a quick dismissal of all of these complicated feelings that go with personal affection. That somebody feels affection for someone and they automatically assume you want to go to bed with them, when in actuality it might just be that you have admiration for things that are not necessarily sexual but are very highly loving.
Yeah.
And to be able for men to have these close friendships and have these relationships and not have to take that energy and shake it off real quick in terms of, well, let's just have sex and then we'll know
right.
what to do with this. There are a lot of men who are clearly heterosexual in their preference, but who run across a relationship with another man where they feel a kind of love, and it's very confusing and threatening for them, and oftentimes they don't know what to do with it. Now, what do you all have to say about that?
Well, what you describe as feel this kind of love also includes, you know, real components of sexual energy. And that's
yes.
where it gets complicated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because love is one thing. You can love somebody. You can, you know, there can be father-son love. There can be man-to-man love. But there truly is sexual energy that's being exchanged, whether or not it's being, you know, it's being expressed physically.
Yeah,
that
is an important thing. Yeah.
And when men feel that, especially okay, men who are really sort of living out these caricatures of maleness that are really something that we're trying to let go of here, that can be very threatening. But what I hear you saying is that there's more flexibility now around exploring this, and ultimately it just comes down to the energy anyway. This is going on, whether or not we are allowing ourselves to be aware of it, whether or not we are allowing ourselves to express it, that exchange is going on. And so it's coming to consciousness now so that we will recognize it and do something about it. And when we get down to the bottom of things and understand that sexual energy is shared between all human beings, and we start to become cognizant of that, you know, when you extrapolate a little bit, you might start to see that, you know, all those bullets and missiles are all shaped like something in particular.
Yes,
right?
Indeed.
And
yes,
when, and you know, let me just say this. I mean, I'm not making a joke, really. It's just that when we deny our love, and I'm speaking to men now, when we deny our love for our brother, and we deny it enough, and we deny it to a strong enough extent, we have to kill them. And that's exactly what we do with those things that are shaped like that, right? So it's not that we have to go into physical sexual relations with each other. It's just understanding that that energy is present between us. And if it wasn't, there'd be nobody left on the planet because the competition between men would be so great that we would kill each other. We would just annihilate ourselves.
Yeah.
Well,
true.
You know, I have to add something, though, from, I guess, the gender of the female.
Thank you.
What
you
guys
like
are describing, I'm experiencing. That's why you keep going, I'm talking to the guys, and I honor that you're talking to the guys, but I sit here and go, I think that these programs are not necessarily gender-based. In other words, my programming got really whacked and twisted with the whole molestation, but I can tell you that the equation of that whacking program was that I believe that sexual love was the way to receive love. I mean, that was my belief until therapy and spirituality and things of that helped me to see different. And I can tell you that I'm just beginning to say, you mean I can have a relationship, I can feel loved, and I don't have to sleep with you? I mean, this is relatively new to me.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think it's just the guys. I think it's the program.
The only thing is that throughout history, it's always been more accessible and allowable to see two little girls holding hands and walking down the street than to see two little boys doing it. I mean,
it's been more accessible and allowable for men to kill each other with weapons, and that's why
hit each other, you know. And
right.
And how many of those fights, fist fights that happen in the bar on Saturday night are actually sexual exchanges between these men?
Exactly.
I mean,
really? Okay, well, I didn't see. Okay, because I guess it's the sexual, because for me, you know, I'm going to myself, you have no idea. Women might not kill each other, but they will destroy careers for each other. There is a type of killing going on within female to female that is very competitive. You know, so there's, it's like there's metaphors of this in our gender that I think definitely, I feel like it stems from the same sociological equation.
It's there.
It does. And there's, that's so true. And we, and just like Angelo said earlier, when it comes right down to it, we still have to, it all funnels into one. And so we're, our goal is the fact, some of us get there earlier than others. So some people are going to be more in their oneness than others are going to be. But the fact is that the evolution of society as a whole, what we're used to seeing, is that it's always been more acceptable for women to show their affection with one another with little hugs and kisses and hand-holding than it has been for little boys. But nowadays, what's happening is more and more of that is finding its way gracefully into human society. So there are these hugs and handshakes and things that people do. More and more, they're growing into, they're able to say in not so many words, I love you, brother, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I had this wonderful experience when I met Grandpa Carl, who's a 90-year-old healer. Many people have heard me talk about Grandpa Carl. He's got hands like king crabs, and he was...
We're a family show, Daniel.
I'll tell you. He was a chiropractor for many years, and he worked with his hands on people, and he does these wonderful healing techniques. But I remember when I first met him, you know, he put his hands on me in a healing thing, and then I did him in a healing thing, and when we were done, we were hugging, and he said to me, you know, I love you, man. And he says in so many words, doesn't mean I want to go to bed with you, but I love you, man. He had his own way of saying that. That's why I know we're a family show. But I finally said to him, Carl, you know, I'm so glad we got that out of the way, you know, because I love you too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can actually remember consciously when I was still in an unconscious place, I would be watching football games, and I can remember consciously saying, oh, look how nice. They'll pat each other on the ass. You know, they'll you know, touch each other, they'll pat each other on the back. And, I mean, I remember saying to myself, look, they're at least being physical with each other in a positive way. Now, of course, you know, in the meantime, they're getting brutally destroyed as the sport, you know, goes on. But within the team, I literally remember saying, look, guys touching each other, that is so nice to see. You know, as opposed to, you know, the warring and stuff that you guys are saying.
And in a very real way, you know, many of these sports or traditions or things that we do in society are like saying, we know we want to do this, we just have to find sensible ways to do it so that we don't misunderstand, unless we want to understand, that, you know, there's many ways to express love and experience love, you know.
Absolutely.
And to no longer restrict those expressions to one gender or another, this is the point.
Absolutely, yeah.
And or from one person to another. In other words, people talk about your significant other. But, you know, when it comes to living in the now kind of attitude, isn't every other that we're with significant in that moment?
Absolutely.
I mean, if we're sharing a universe with that person in that moment, focusing on something, they've got to be significant, you know. For that moment, they are our significant other, and that's what brings it down to these definitions and roles and commitments that we make and assignments of importance, you know. Because people say, well, he's my significant other, thereby implying that everyone else that you see is just,
is not significant.
They're just extra.
Right. This is why I tell people that your soulmate is whoever you're with.
We're all soulmates. I mean, exactly. And these are, because the way it feels to me is, it's like we can use these terms, we just need to broaden the definitions, we need to expand the definition because in the limited duality, it can create a lot of, you know, the friction of the sense of being in lack, when if you broaden these definitions, it's like it becomes clear that the nature of life is abundant. It's all here for us, you know, and I know I'm going a little bit, you know, into that whole oneness thing, but because it's like, from my own experience, I'm a love seeker, man. I love love. And, you know, I did a session with Daniel, and, you know, it came to my awareness and my clarity that don't chase the man, chase the energy of love. Well, don't chase, but seek out the energy of love, and everything will fall into place for you, Goldie. Everything. Just follow the energy, not the quote-unquote person, you know, and that can be anything, a person, a job, a house that you're trying to buy.
Yeah.
You know, we focus on one thing, and then all the abundance that's around us that we do have in the moment, if you're not focusing on it, you're not in the humility of rendering it with value and presence and reverence.
Very well put.
Thank you.
She's singing, that girl. I love it.
And
I want to make sure also, go ahead, because Robert, make sure you please talk about how to get in contact with you. You are fabulous. I want the listeners to know how to get a hold of you.
I think the best thing to do would be to broadcast my web address, because all my contact information is on there. So if we can get the spelling of my name right, I can be found.
Okay.
So.
You go. Clearly, you won't mess that up.
So it's robertsabella.com. So Robert, S as in Seattle, Abella, .com, and I can be found through there.
Cool. And your website, both your websites, including. The Star Kids, or what is it, the Star
Children? Yeah, it's www.thestarchildren.com and www.reconnections.net.
Okay, and all of this is on all that's on the web page. So if they go to the archives, it's all up there.
Yeah, you put it there, didn't you? Yes. You
did. Of course, yes.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have about 9 more minutes, which is, I mean, you know, we definitely still have some time, and if there's any kind of points that, you know, we really want to drive home,
you funneled it. You very appropriately funneled it into, and I'm sorry, I must have said something early on, too, gave people the impression we didn't want any more callers. Have we had any more callers?
No, and I, of course, no, I would have...
I
would have brought them on if they called. People are listening. Because I think the flow of the conversation, and I say this because I've been talking to people on Facebook that are, you know, sharing with me how my show is helping them, which is, you know, stay humble, Goldie. and I, by talking to them, I'm bringing in the things that I'm sharing with them, and therefore, you know, it's getting talked about, so their questions are being answered even if they're not calling in.
So it's being funneled into this whole idea that we are all one, and we understand, for example, that the purpose of relationship in this these transformational times is so that we can have physical representations of aspects of ourselves that we couldn't normally see if that person wasn't there, because we might say we live right now in a hall of mirrors, and that was one of the first metaphysical lessons that came was, there's no one here but you, God, you know, you and your mirrors.
Mm.
And so the idea of being able to say that and begin to really believe that, so that when I'm talking to a child, for example, I'm talking to part of my own magical inner child that has fragmented out and taken physical form and is willing to come up and tell me a little bit about ourselves, you know, who our one self, who we are. And when I am attracted to a woman, particularly who has an attribute of something that I find unusual or intriguing, I'm really gaining access to my own internal feminine through that experience. And the same thing is true about another male or even animals. There's a primal animal nature that humanity has become very estranged from that really needs to be brought into the picture as well, or people
as well.
We discover our cat nature. I did a series called The Cat People. We discover the loyalty aspect of dogs, the ability of dogs to produce positive energy and cats to absorb negative energy, and how they perform these services for us.
And by looking at each relationship with a man, with a woman, with an animal, what you observe is the perfect description of what your relationship with that energy is. So you want to be taking notes. You want to be paying attention rather than feeling victimized, for instance, by someone who's not giving you what you want. Because what they're really showing you in the case of, let's say it's a man, is your relationship with your own inner male energy. And so, like you said, Daniel, it's all, you know, it's a hall of mirrors. And if we really go in, I mean, there's a humility piece again. If you go in with that level of humility, you will learn exactly where you are.
That is the gateway to humility, by the way. And it's also the gateway to being psychic. If you want to know how to read your world in a deeply psychic way, then begin with the belief that each part of that world is an aspect of you. And you will automatically go into that place, just like the Star Kid did in that dream. He said, I wonder what it feels like to be there. And suddenly he was there because he was willing to say, yes, you too are me.
That's exquisite information. That's clarity at its finest, both of you.
So being able to see that as a reflection and make that connection within, like Robert was talking about metaphors and symbols and the importance that comes out, for example, in the Da Vinci Code and this newest one, The Lost Symbol, I've been reading recently. Dan Brown, you know, he's bringing up the importance, the ancient importance of metaphors and symbols and rituals and traditions and things that are designed by societies to be shareholders and reflectors of various aspects of history, of human nature, and sacred truth.
So, because like my understanding of symbols is that it's like when you're looking at the symbol, you're missing the essence of a fluid experience. In other words, if you look at a tree and you see oak tree, you're missing the being that's fluidly changing and, you know, wanting to share its energy with you and, you know, but I didn't get the feeling that's what you were saying, Daniel.
Well, in many instances, it depends. A symbol can be anything you need it to be. For example, it can be a reference point that takes your consciousness somewhere. Like, and as soon as you see that symbol, you immediately think of a historical situation or a particular person. Like the symbol of the cross. Or you see, for example, the flag, you know, and
right.
The stars and the stripes and so on.
And if you connect with the energy of the symbol, then it has the power to take you beyond the ego. Or just the rational definition of, like, for instance, the name. So the symbols themselves should be energetic, not just these descriptions.
Right, yeah. Not flat. It sounds so flat to
that,
just say,
you know,
a tree is an oak tree.
You enter the energy of the symbol, and it literally frees you because you're connecting with the multidimensional representation of what it is versus the linear left brain definition.
A symbol, for example, can be a lock that guards something, but it can also be a doorway that opens to that. And the key that's put into the lock would be yourself. When you say, I and that symbol are one, you're putting yourself into that symbol like a key goes into a lock, and immediately a whole new domain or realm opens to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the best statements I've ever heard was in the movie The Devil's Advocate, where the devil, played by Al Pacino, was describing his insidious nature, and he said, I'm the hand up Mona Lisa's skirt. You know? And in his way of saying, I'm a surprise. People don't see me coming, you know, because they're assuming they're going to see this guy in a red suit and a pitchfork, and I might come dressed as a little old woman, you know, selling flowers on the side of the road. But when he used that expression, these rich metaphors become gateways into whole new understandings of human dynamic and human nature.
Yeah, being open, I think, is a wonderful precipice to exploring who we truly are by nature, and we are coming effortlessly. I mean, this is what's in store for us, you know, from this point on. The show is just about to end its stream. You guys, thank you so much. I would love to do this again. If you're open to it, I would love to have both of you on the show again. You're both exquisite, together or separately.
Wonderful, wonderful. You're such a
thank
great
you,
host.
Thank you, Goldie. Yeah, either scenario would be fine with me.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I know that I can't even tell. This really is an archive that personally has touched me deeply. And both of you, all three of us, actually. Hey, kudos to all three of us. It was an amazing dance tonight. It was an amazing dance. Thank you.
Thanks, Goldie.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Welcome in 2010. I will talk to everybody next week. You guys, thank you so much. I'll talk to both of you soon.
Good night.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we can all do that.